the National Hour, Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. We kick off the National Hockey League tonight on this side of North America.
Mm-hmm.
A little over 5 minutes to go in the first period, the Blues and the Kraken. Then at 7 p.m., the Bruins and the Panthers. Uh-huh. And then to conclude a triple header tonight, the Chicago Blackhawks and the Utah Hockey Club, not to be confused with the Utah Golf Club, the Utah Bridge Club, the Utah Chess Club.
Utah, give me a name already. How about that?
Utah Debate Club.
Blues Kraken 0-0 in a hotly contested battle. The middiest.
Seattle Kraken making history. Kraken making history tonight with
Jessica Campbell,
first female
woman ever to coach on an NHL bench today. Congratulations to her. A very cool milestone, and first to many, I would assume.
You know what I'm really excited for by far the most out of everything? Is to watch Bedard play tonight.
Yeah.
Feel like it's going
to
be...
Are you looking forward to him handing the puck off to Ilya Mikheyev, who beats it into a square at 1 million miles an hour?
That's not the greatest line mate for Bedard.
It's Mikheyev, Teravainen, and Bedard right now, which love that he has guys that can move the puck forward, and Teravainen's all right.
A few minutes, we're going to be joined by Sat Shaw, host of Canucks Central, Canucks game host for Sportsnet. We'll get into the Vancouver Canucks and following up success, albeit to start the season without their number one goalie in Demko.
Yeah, and I also have to offer a mea culpa because yesterday I called Tucker Pullman a serviceable D-man, which he was, but forgetting that he did not play hockey last season.
But he could be.
He could be, and he has been, but last season.
Also later on in the hour, Dominic Moore, former NHL veteran, mm-hmm. Rangers, Leafs, he'll join us and we'll get a better feel for what's going on in Utah.
He's a busy guy today. He was texting me. He's like, I'm running around.
Of course
around.
He is.
But then he said he's like anything for Kipper. So, loves you.
Awesome. Looking forward to Dom joining us. So, while we wait for Sat, just your overall feeling, and we'll get it from him more. But, like, I'm petrified for Vancouver Canuck fans.
Wow.
With this knee injury to Thatcher Demko.
Mm-hmm.
I am. I'm like, this is...
You don't like Shelov's Lankinen?
No. Shelov's has had a great camp, mm-hmm. and I think these guys will do a good job of holding the fort here.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if we're talking about a Vancouver Canuck team that has to go or wants to go deep, they have to have Demko back at some point.
Yeah.
And just how optimistic is everybody that whatever he's going through can get fixed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that obviously hangs over the season, but they have time for that because, as you mentioned, this is like they have graduated as a franchise to now playoffs is the focus, and how can they get ready for then as long as they're winning enough games? And, guys, they're going to. Quinn Hughes, Phil Peronic, Susie Myers, Forbort Desharnais, pretty darn good. Top-end guys with Miller and Besser and Pettersson, DeBrusque. Like, they're still, this is a pretty elite hockey team, so I understand Demko's a concern. They're going to win enough to get in. He just needs to be ready for then.
Big year for Pettersson. This is the first year the contract kicks in. Remember what happened with the narrative around him, the playoff time last year where it just went really sour. Got a new line mate, and I would assume that him and DeBrusque are going to be playing together.
They are, yeah, with Sprong, it looks like.
Big year for Pettersson.
I think last year set him up as he's a lightning rod. He's turned himself into a lightning rod.
But he's Vancouver Marner. He is the talented, well-paid, you know, bit of a letdown in the playoffs, center of attention, where people love him, some hate him. He's obviously great.
90, 100 points, don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
We're just
going to... You're the like the expectations are incredibly high mm-hmm. for Petey.
Well, good news, we have someone to weigh in on this.
All right, let's bring him in. Sat Shaw, what's going on, buddy?
What's happening, boys?
We're good,
excited, man. Hockey begins today, and tomorrow the Canucks start. It's another long season. Can't wait.
Everybody tired of training camp out there as much as us here?
Oh yeah, man! I totally over training camp, and especially after last year where the Canucks had a bit of a playoff run, go a couple of rounds, so it took kind of less importance in the preseason. I mean, the past few years, the preseason would have been maybe the most optimistic time to be a Canucks fan because you hadn't played game one yet. You hadn't seen the failures quite yet, and things didn't turn around. So now it's kind of shifted. You just want to get through the preseason. So very excited for tomorrow.
So knowing the success that the team had last season, what has changed in terms of your expectations for this group at the start of the season?
Well, I think I don't really care so much about winning the division. I think what you want to see from this team is to be a solid playoff team for the majority of the season. And the real challenge begins come playoff time. I think they've got to the point now where just get to the playoffs, be healthy, and then it comes down to can you get past the second round. And maybe that's asking a lot for a team that finally made the playoffs for the first time since the bubble season in 2019-2020. But I think with where this roster is at, with a lot of these young guys being in their prime, JT hitting the age 31 season, Demko, we're not sure about his status, a couple of years left on his contract. You never know how big a window is and how long it's going to last. And when you look at the relative strength of the West and the entire National Hockey League, it's as good a chance as the Canucks may have over the next few years. So I think the expectation should be at least get past the first round again and hopefully maybe even go a bit farther.
So Seth, the feel of not so much worrying about winning a division, just getting in, and certainly maybe a weaker Pacific still with the likes of Ducks and Sharks and Anaheim shouldn't be that big of a concern. But is it led because Demko's not there to start? Does that alleviate the push to be great every night and just to build something over 82 games because Demko isn't there and we don't know when he'll return?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then when he returns, what is it going to look like, right? And how long is he going to be able to stay in the lineup, and what level can he play at? That's the other question of when he does return. So even when he returns, Kipper, I'm with you. I think we have to wait a few weeks to a couple of months to really know where he's at. It's an injury that not many goaltenders or any goaltenders have a history of having gone through. So we don't know what he's going to go through and what the recovery looks like, especially after some wear and tear. And maybe he plays, you know, 2-3 games in a week. How does that look the following week? Those are all questions that are unanswered. And I think in terms of expectations, perhaps, you know, it takes away some of that pressure. But I do think organizationally, they have very high standards. I mean, me from the media sitting here and saying, yeah, you know, whether you win the division or not, or just make the playoffs, I think organizationally, not to say that it matters that they win the division, but I think they want to even best last year if possible. So I think that's how they view it. So I'm not sure they're going to internally use it as an excuse, because they have shored up the goaltending, at least short term, getting Lankinen, having Shilovs and Schultz and Promise last year. So I think they're not going to necessarily buy that even with Demko out, we'll be okay if we don't win the division. I think their standards are very high. But in terms of what this team is going to look like come playoff time or later in the season, the goaltending is a big question. Whether it's Demko or, you know, Shilovs and Lankinen, can they actually hold it down until Demko gets healthy?
Sad. What is this? We don't care if they win the division stuff. They had 10 points last year? Is this like a, hey, Edmonton is probably going to run away with this and that's okay sort of talk?
I think partially, but I think when you look at, you know, teams that have success, I don't think winning the division is a prerequisite necessarily having playoff success. So I think as long as you show that you're a complete team, and if a team gets 112 points, you get 108. Is that a failure? You know, so I think that's kind of the way I view it too, in terms of what the division looks like. And I'm with you about Edmonton, but one team I'm really curious about in the regular season, guys, in the Pacific is the Vegas Golden Knights. I know they don't have the firepower that they, you know, they lost with Marchessault and not having Stevenson, but they're a highly motivated group. Their defense is still as good or better than most teams in the league. They have a lot of depth. Their goaltending should be solid, and they play as good a team game as most teams in the league. I wouldn't be surprised if that team is just uber motivated this year and has a great regular season. I have questions about how far they can go in the playoffs. But in terms of motivation, in terms of style of play, and in terms of having a strong defense and two-way game, I think this is a really strong team that's being slept on. It wouldn't shock me at all, guys. I'm not sure I'm going to pick Vegas to win the division, but it wouldn't shock me at all if they end up winning the division. I'm not sure they're going to win a cup, but I can see them being a strong regular season team.
So, Sad, as far as the blue line is concerned, Hughes and Roenick, as good as any pair in the National Hockey League last year. Carson Soucy, almost as reliable to Vancouver as Ekholm was to Edmonton. He's really stepped up. And then I'm not sure where the next three or four guys are situated here. They got Tyler Myers, who's, you know, 34 now, I guess. Is he situated still to be a legit top four guy? And then Desharnais and Forbert. You know, it just seemed like Zadorov built something so incredible last year. Is there a letdown too when it comes to maybe 5 and 6 now as a third pair?
Well, on paper, you're right, Kipper. I mean, the third pair is not as strong as the one we saw in the postseason. With having Zadorov, they had Ian Cole as well, who I think was very underrated with his defensive play, really good on the PK, great leadership as well. And even though he's more stay-at-home, one thing Ian Cole does really well is make that first pass. He has a nice deception till he moves the puck out of his own end. And it's slightly better than what guys like Desharnais and Forbert can do. So just from even a puck-moving standpoint, that's one thing I wonder about. On the PK, both those guys should be fine, so I don't worry about Forbert and Desharnais in terms of helping the PK out. But last year was a bit of a renaissance year from Tyler Myers. Had 29 points. He played legitimate top 4 minutes, and he acquitted himself very well. Him and Soucy made a great pair. But we haven't seen Myers in Vancouver put together back-to-back years of that type of caliber, and that's going to be something to watch. And the question, I think, all year in terms of the roster skater-wise, beyond the goaltending, is going to be, do they need another top four defenseman at some point in time this season? The forward group, I think you feel pretty good about how they're shaped out. They have some internal options for center too if injuries happen or they need somebody to play a checking role. But they don't really have anybody knocking on the door that's ready today to play top 4 minutes. So if Desharnais and Forbert, they kind of struggle in their roles 5-on-5, their puck movement's going to be a bit lackluster. I think at some point this year, guys, we're going to see Patrick Galvin add another defenseman. They have some cap space. They have some capital to move if they need to acquire one. And they're a team that is very aggressive. And I think that's going to be the big thing to watch. I wouldn't be surprised that by the deadline, the Canucks are in the hunt for a top four defenseman.
So they've made a couple additions up front. How do those names affect, you know, Danton Heinen and Jake DeBrusque? How much are they, do they affect the way the Canucks look this season?
I think they make a big difference in terms of how they want to play stylistically. They're not going to change their identity as a team. I think what they want to do is create some more rush chances, which will perhaps create a few more chances the skaters will take. But what they want is just to have faster players in the wing. I think last year, one of the things you saw, especially when a guy like Hugh Suter or Phil DiGiuseppe was playing alongside Besser and JT Miller, that first forward in, not a ton of pop on the wings. You didn't see enough speed to get in on the forecheck and put so much pressure on JT to do everything. And he did. I mean, he was incredible. And Besser scored 40 goals. We saw it in the playoffs. That pace wasn't quite there. There were so many pucks that if they had a faster winger, they would have got to. It would have led to more zone time, more pressure on the opposition. So I think with Heinen, especially if he does start there with JT and Besser, at least it looks like he will, I think he's going to be a real nice addition, a bit faster, a bit bigger, a good forechecker, can play off JT. I think what he allows for JT as well, when JT's been on his best playing center, he has another center next to him that he can kind of change with, because JT loves going to along the wall. So if he has confidence that he's playing with a winger who can play center, he can cover the middle for him. And I think you're going to see a lot better version of JT. Whereas last year, I think he kind of held himself back a lot because he didn't want to, you know, expose themselves going back the other way. So I can see that line really being affected by it. But especially the top line, having Jake DeBrusque, I think he could be similar to Mikheyev with his all-around game. Obviously, Mikheyev is a bit faster, but he's a finisher. There's so many chances last year that Ilya Mikheyev just couldn't put in the net. And we're talking about he could have scored easily 10, 15 more goals and just didn't have the finish to put them in. DeBrusque is going to have that. And then you add the fact that you have a guy like Daniel Sprong has some pace. You have Kiefer Sherwood, he has some pace. So they have all these different types of forwards that can play the F1 role, that can forecheck, that can score a little bit. So I think they could be far more dynamic in their style of play this year, especially with how Tocchet wants them to play.
Daniel Sprong, I think, will be in a situation where we'll see him with Petey and DeBrusque. Heinen as well is a guy that I've liked over the years as a serviceable player, but now we're talking top six for both of them on a team that's supposed to make some noise here. So, I mean, how's their camps been? And, you know, is that legit? Are those legit spots for them?
Yeah, I think DeBrusque has the bigger responsibility. I mean, when you've given the guy a seven-year contract worth almost $40 million, there's an expectation he's going to be more than a third guy in a line. I think they're hoping that him and Pettersson really have some chemistry. And one thing to, you know, keep in mind with DeBrusque, if it doesn't work with Pettersson, he could be an ideal line mate for Brock Besser and JT Miller. Like, he's the perfect F1 left winger to play alongside those two guys. So that's one thing I wonder about. If DeBrusque doesn't quite pop with Pettersson, is that going to be another look we see here? But expectation for DeBrusque is, can he become a 30-goal scorer consistently? That's what they're paying him for. That's what they want to get out of him. So I think the expectation should be that he can pop and be a legit top six. I think Heinen's a bit more different in terms of, yes, he's playing a top six role, but he's very much going to be the third guy on the line, which is going to be more of doing the dirty work. And I think in general, when we look at a lot of these teams around the league, they look for the duos and the third guy is a bit more interchangeable. I think in an ideal world, Heinen's maybe a more third line caliber player. But I think in terms of the role he's going to play alongside JT and Besser, it makes sense. And I'm hopeful he can execute it because he is better than some guys they've thrown out there the past couple of years on that line.
Sat, what does Rick Tocchet's fascinating guy for me, love hearing him in interviews. What has been his focus this camp? Is there something he seems most preoccupied with?
Well, it's been the breakouts. They want to create more rush opportunities this year, and they're going to be a lot more aggressive, I think, attacking on the weak side and even in their own zone when they're set up in the offensive zone. They've been activating the trailer a lot, coming in from the weak side as well. They're trying to create that backdoor play. So I think we're going to see a team that's going to try to be a lot more aggressive on the rush. And also in terms of when they're set up in the offensive zone, they're going to have their defense jump in a lot more. So don't be surprised to see guys like Carson Soucy even, or even guys like Desharnais being asked to load up and chip in going weak side. So that's something to watch. But overall, it's how they're going to handle their breakouts. One thing that Tocchet spoke a lot about last year, especially in the playoffs, was they didn't hold on to pucks long enough and they didn't trust each other enough to make plays getting out of the zone. It was more about dumping the puck out, get it off the glass, or just dump it in. And he wants guys to make more plays. So it might be a bit of an awkward phase early on as they try to figure this stuff out. Are we going to see them get a bit too spaced from one another? Are they going to get caught from time to time as they try to perfect creating some more rush opportunities? But that's the biggest thing stylistically that's different this year from last year, is the emphasis on creating more in the offensive zone and also creating more off the rush.
In terms of pending UFAs next June here in Toronto, a lot of focus on Marner, but I don't know if you guys got a look at the list, the potential list. There's some big names out there, Rantanen, Hall, still a very good player, and Brock Besser.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been fascinating watching Brock Besser go from a guy a few years ago to, hey, go find yourself a deal and come back to us, to a 40-goal scorer. And where's his scenario? Where's his situation? Where's the concern for a Vancouver Canucks fan?
Well, I think for the Canucks, they want to keep him. We had Alvin on our show yesterday on Canuck Central, and I asked them, are you going to have a resolution one way or another by the deadline with Brock Besser? And he said, yes, we're going to have a resolution. And I thought it was interesting. He didn't say, hey, we'll see what happens. We don't have to sign him this year. We can wait for the offseason. I think he's too important a player to allow him to just walk in free agency for them. So I think they are going to get a resolution one way or another. I think ultimately the appetite is to keep them. And as you mentioned, Kipper, there are some nice free agents, but how many of those guys are truly going to get there? And if you don't end up keeping Brock Besser, how do you replace a 30, 40 goal scorer that's a right-handed shot? They're so hard to find in the league, especially a guy in that 28, 29 age range who's going to be in this prime of his career. I see them ultimately working something out here. And the biggest thing they're waiting for is, what is Besser going to look like this year coming off the blood clot issue? And it's not a life-threatening issue in that sense, but there are minor things that he's going to have to adjust this year. So because of the clotting issue, he can't sleep on the plane anymore. So he's going to have to get up and move more. So in terms of road trips and how he handles rest and recovery, it's going to be different. So things like this, I think we have to kind of keep an eye on for the first part of the season. How is he going to adjust? Are we going to see a player that can be effective at home and on the road? And then what is he going to look like in terms of his all-around game? And as long as he hits those markers and looks good, I think they're going to talk contract a couple months into the season. It wouldn't shock me at all that they get something done with him, before the trade deadline. But I think the biggest thing is, what does Brock look like? And as much as there's no long-term concern about his health, he does have to deal with some issues now. And how is he going to be able to succeed while adjusting some of his lifestyle?
So last one for me, I wrote an article, two sentence expectations for every team in the NHL. I think it's important to set that sort of parameter. So, at Christmas, we're like, all right, we kind of thought they'd be struggling, so it's no big deal, or the opposite. Canucks, who do you have in the West that you like more than the Canucks? Just to get a sense of how highly rated you have this team.
I mean, I'm pretty high on the team. The only team I think is obviously in a different tier is Edmonton. Because if I compare the rosters, and I've gone through every single roster so many different times in the Western Conference and the entire National Hockey League for that matter. But even a team like Dallas, as good as Dallas is, they still lost Pavelski. And a lot of it comes down to Maverick Bork this year, Logan Stankoven. And we know with young guys, as much as they have potential, it's not always linear year to year. So are they going to be able to replace Pavelski, his production, and his consistency in that type of role? That's one thing I wonder about. And their blue line, for as much as they had a strong blue line at the deadline with getting Chris Tanev, they got guys like Brendan Smith right now, right? They have guys like Lyubushkin and Matt Dumba that they're asking a lot from. And as good as their goaltending is, you know, Casey DeSmith is an adequate backup. But I have some questions about Dallas. I don't know if I could put Dallas in a separate tier from Vancouver. So to me, there's only one obviously better team. But then that next tier, guys, Vancouver, Dallas, say Nashville even, there's probably four or five teams that are in the exact same tier that I can't say are better than Vancouver, but they're pretty much on par.
And how's our buddy Tuck out there? Relaxed? Is he feeling good, ready? Big year under his belt now. How's he treating you?
I mean, Tuck's the best, honestly. I mean, he's one of those guys that, I mean, PR has to pull him away when you talk to him to the side, right? Like, you know, he loves talking hockey. I've never met a coach before that is so beloved across the league. Like, every single person we talk to, it's a running joke on the show now. Like, so what's your story with Rick Tuck? It's, oh, yeah, Tuck, it's my buddy. Like, every single person we talk to has some talk and story in the National Hockey League, it seems like. And he's just such a personable guy that you're so easy to kind of approach and talk to. Like, I had some questions about the breakouts, and I pulled him to the side in training camp. And he gave me 5-10 minutes explaining what they were looking to do. And he's so, like, geeked up talking about these little things. Yeah. So he's honestly, like, a massive hockey nerd. And for us hockey nerds, that's the perfect guy to have a coach.
Yeah.
How great for Vancouver Canucks. They go from Gabby Boudreaux to Rick Tocchet.
Yeah. And meanwhile, we went from Sheldon Keefe to Charlie Chaplin. we're dying, Zach. We're dying.
Hey, don't steal talking in a couple of years. That's the only thing you guys shouldn't be doing. But yeah, we'll see how it goes.
We'll do our best.
Zach, great stuff, man. Hope you have a great start to the season. Thanks for doing this, and looking forward to you on our show throughout the season, man.
Yeah, can't wait, guys. Thanks so much. Have a great one.
Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it.
Zach Shaw. Host of Canucks Central, Canucks game host for Sportsnet as well. Yeah, Sammy, like, come on, get Rick Tocchet on our show.
What are you doing?
Yeah, I'll do my best.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Do I need to call?
Listen, we'll talk about that one. We'll put a pin in that. Circle back on that one.
We'll get
back
in the new
year. We'll circle back on that one.
He likes us, I think.
Yeah, he loves us. He used to come on the show all the time. He was a great fan of the show. Yeah, it was good. That was a good chat with Sat.
Sat knows his stuff, man.
Yeah. He kind of talked me into the Canucks a little bit. I was a little bit worried about them, but you do look top to bottom and
well, and
looks
not
pretty
to
good.
Be what you know that guy, but like Calgary, Anaheim, San
no,
Jose are
no,
gonna
no.
hemorrhage points this year.
Yes. They all stink.
Yes.
So you're in the playoffs.
Yes.
Here's your, you know.
So, you know, are they in a situation where they're trying to figure out who their first opponent is and all of that without Demko to start?
Well, you know, the Demko thing is...
I'd have a big concern.
Yeah.
About the knee and why it has not gotten
better.
Yeah, and
so I think you'll keep an eye on how Shelaz Lankinen looks.
I'm not sure if he's still taking shots.
Yeah.
Right? He's not practicing. I don't think he's...
Brad May.
I don't think he's practicing with the team. So, like, when it's not good.
No. Nope. So that is a big plot line there. Seattle and Los Angeles, the other two teams in that division. I don't think LA is that good. Seattle's better than they were, but
pretty mid.
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 So
game time?
Game time.
It's game time. Presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. I actually have a couple games to talk about here today. Looking at the Bruins and Florida Panthers, who are somehow playing in Florida tonight. And I don't know what's going
Scary
on there.
Scary times in Florida.
Yeah.
Thoughts
really
are with
big
everyone
time.
There. Get somewhere safe.
But the Boston Bruins are plus 125 underdogs in Florida tonight, minus 150 if you want to bet on the Panthers. And in the Chicago Blackhawks are plus 145 against the Utah Hockey Club. And talking about the Blackhawks gives me a chance to talk about Connor Bedard. He is plus 175 for an anytime goal scorer tonight, plus 800 for the first goal scorer of that game. And his goal total on Bet365, the number is 34.5, even odds on both sides, minus 110 on the under, minus 110 on the over. I got to tell you.
Okay. See,
are you going to whine about him playing too much tonight?
No,
again?
I'm not.
Sure?
I just want to ask you guys one simple question.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, how good is this guy going to be?
Really good.
Okay, what does that mean?
Like, he's going to be, by the end of this season, we're going to talk about him as a top 10 guy in the league.
You're talking career peak?
Which is fine for me.
Okay.
But what does it mean when we hear generational player? Like, top 10 to me is nothing.
There's nine other
I got to be honest with you. I'm not impressed that, you know, you tell me he's a top 10 player or he's going to be a top 10 player in the next few years. I want to know what
this
is his
season.
Ceiling to be one of the greatest players in our modern history.
You're saying, can he be Sidney Crosby? Is that what you're saying?
Am I wrong to suggest that when everybody's told me this is a generational player?
No, that would be the player of your generation.
Okay, so like, what does that mean? He's going to dominate games like Sid. Sid, when we think of
Sid
historically a point guy, if we think about Sid, Sid's numbers are off the charts, but they're not. They didn't blow you away.
No.
They're not. He's
never been 150 point. McDavid.
They're not 150, 170 like Mario's years. Or even McDavid's last few years. Like, is he
one day? His career high is 120 in his second season.
Is he a 90 to 120 a guy, career guy?
But that's a telltale thing. Sid's second season was his highest point total.
But every single year he has over 80.
So is that 06, 07, though, when all the stats went through the roof?
Yeah,
so my question to you is, will he ever score 150 points?
Yeah, I could see it.
You can see it?
I could see it. I could. Once he gets a little older, get some better teammates.
Yeah, but if he does it, it's going to be in the next like 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, it tends to be these young guys, superstars.
Will he dominate a game physically too, like a Sid Crosby?
No.
That's the thing with Sid is, I forget who's said it, but we've all been saying it for years now, is that he's just an elite grinder. You know, like he still does those grindy things that not many superstars do.
Can he take over a game?
Yeah, right. I think it's coming for Bedard. He's special.
I'm biased. I love him, and I'm super high on him, so I'm maybe the wrong guy to ask, but I think he's going to be a
stud. The league in terms of expectation, fame, whatever, it was Crosby and McDavid were equal in terms of, like, the level of whatever. Bedard might be what? Like a layer just under that? Like
The hype, he was right there with Connor and Sid, I think.
Was he?
Right there. And I'm just...
It's tough when you're 5'11
or whatever.
Sid's 5'11.
Projecting, and I don't. He's a very talented guy. I just don't know if he'll ever be in that kind of bracket.
Bedard scoring 50 tonight. 50 tonight.
Sid, with Sid. Like, to me, the measuring stick is Sid.
Yeah. But who's like the fourth greatest player ever to own skates?
It's tough to live up to Sid. I mean, Sid's.
Generational players do that.
I think he goes above generational. He's one of the greatest of any generation.
I think Connor Bedard scores 100 points.
I think he's going to get 50, for sure.
50 goals?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Anyways, was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. And when we return, we go to Utah. Meet up with Dom Moore.
Love it. Someone just tweeted there's a lot of obstructed view seats. A lot.
Adam, congrats. A lot. How many? We'll find out when we return. Dominic Moore. Next.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
Final hour here on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show, brought to you by Bet365. All right. Let's bring in Dom Moore, who's going to help us set history in the National Hockey League. The Utah Hockey Club set to host the Chicago Blackhawks. To tell us all about it is our good buddy, Dom Moore. Morzy, thanks for doing this, pal. How are you? Give us a sense what's going on out there.
Yeah, good to see you both. It is is I'm trying to get away from the music. There's a whole scene out here in front of Delta Center. We've got live music. We've got a whole bunch of games, a bunch of vendors out here. You can see we've got a giant Utah Hockey Club jersey and the NHL logo. There's a huge puck on the other side. There's a ton of buzz out here throughout the city, and especially around the arena today. This is a historic day here in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, we're excited for you and many of the fans out there. One of one of the challenges is there's going to be many fans with obstructed views because of the arena. No?
No, it's just
I want to ask you, is that a big deal here? Is it true that the owner will have sketch artists for those that can't see and maybe to get a sense of? So what is the situation in terms of the fans and the seats? Can I ask you?
So it's actually an incredible building. So it's one of the steepest buildings in the league, and the atmosphere in there is absolutely incredible. Honestly, I saw some of the obstructive view seats, particularly the ones behind the net. You know, they have to be marked as obstructive view, but actually they're a phenomenal seat. If you actually sit in those seats, you just lean a little bit forward, you can see the net. It really is an incredible venue. It's amazing what they've been able to do to turn it into an NHL arena in such a short period of time. And obviously, over the long term, over the next 2 to 3 years, this place is going to be state of the art and built for both hockey and basketball. But it's a beautiful venue.
So how has it been, because it's all come together so quickly, you know, how temporary do things still feel? Or does it feel like now that it's finally here, the roster's real, the building's real, does it feel like this is real now?
There's nothing temporary about it. There certainly is a feel of building, mm-hmm. because obviously there's such a short runway to get this operation up and running. So there's clearly an understanding that this is only the beginning. But there's certainly the word temporary doesn't exist around here. Everything that's being done is done for the long haul. And this organization has been 1,000% committed to doing things the right way, from the training center, you know, that they've broken ground on in Sandy. That's going to be a world-class facility, to what I just mentioned, what they're doing here at Delta Center. Everyone that's been a part of the organization from the players on out has felt like they have been welcomed with open arms and brought in and set up as quickly as possible and seamlessly as possible to get things going.
We're talking to Dominic Moore, former National Hockey Leaguer, now TV analyst for the Utah Hockey Club. So, Dom, we know that the Coyotes were building something towards, you know, the playoffs potentially. Now they're in Utah. The expectations for this hockey club, either internally or externally, we've seen the likes of Vegas come in, put pressure on their organization to win right away. Seattle's already feeling it in the first couple of years. Where is Utah from the outside or the inside on potentially moving to the next level?
Yeah, I think this team is ready to take a step. You look at what they did in the offseason, adding Sergachev. And again, you know, that shows the commitment that starts at the top from Ryan and Ashley Smith. This is an organization that's committed to winning on and off the ice. And the addition of Sergachev, you know, Bill Armstrong did a great job adding some defensemen that are tough to play against, good defenders like Ian Cole and John Marino, and, you know, Bortuzzo's in there with the veteran presidents. They wanted to, you know, up the ante on the penalty kill. Kevin Stenlin, again, a utility guy that's been added that serves a role there. So I think they wanted to take a step here. I think, Kipper, the goal is to play some meaningful games down the stretch. And, you know, that may not mean playoffs this year, but when you look at the talent they have up front, you know, the Logan Cooleys and Gunthers of the world are just starting to blossom, you know, and we already know what Keller and Schmaltz can do up front. And, you know, Barrett Hayden hasn't had, you know, a full year yet where he can gain that confidence. So I think the talent level up front is without question extremely bright. you know, they're definitely going to be adding some things over the next year or two to build themselves into a contender. But they're in a good, a really good position with the assets they have, the, you know, the cap space they have. It's a good trajectory here.
Well, listen, we're really looking forward to tonight. We'll be right there watching that energy you speak of. Congratulations on the gig. We're going to have you back on the show real soon. Have a great season, pal.
Thanks, guys. Great to see you both.
Thanks, Dom. Appreciate it.
That is Dominic Moore covering the Utah Hockey Club. What? What? What?
This guy, that dude, inaugural kickoff. He's fired up. He's wearing a beautiful suit. He's got the... What's up with the obstructed views? You couldn't say that.
Ask the question.
The second question.
You got to ask the question.
The second question.
But no softballs on this show. I'm sorry.
Kip's on the mound calling for the number one.
Oh, yes. Heater.
Just waving off curveballs.
We're doing a circle change.
We got a schedule to hit. Scram beat it. It's not that bad then. I mean, no. Hey, lean in, and all of a sudden you get another 20%.
Probably right. The seats drop right off. So if you have those seats, it's probably a great view. You just got to be built like Tyler Myers, and you're good to go. Just lean right over.
I'm looking at a tweet of the picture, and yeah, it's like you can see out great, but right down below you, it's tough to see. Like I sat
but
up.
It
in
depends
the,
how dramatic you take that picture. Are you taking it flat? Are you taking it angled?
I don't know if either of you guys have ever been in the press box at Scotiabank Arena, but you're doing a lot of this. You're looking over. Like, there's places where you have to lean in and see things. Like, maybe it's not as bad as people are making it out to be, but maybe it's horrible. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe to both of those.
Yeah. Well, wasn't the Islanders forever at the... Didn't they have bad obstructed views in that? Yeah. And, like, it's...
Definitely.
It's happened. Yeah. So, anyways.
I don't mind the hockey club. I'm with Dom.
I'm offended that you don't mind it.
No, you mean the team.
Yeah,
the team, not the name.
No, not the name. I'm talking about the team.
Oh, okay.
Like Clayton Keller, I like a lot.
Name.
Logan Cooley, of course, we've seen flashes of brilliance. Great.
I like that Michelli. You like Lawson Kraus.
Who? Jack McBain. Mm. I am a big McBain Simpsons fan.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that, I don't know, him and a teammate went into Costco to get like sparkling water and came out with a hot tub.
That's the most NHL young guy thing to do ever. Just have a bunch of money and no one to tell you not to do stupid things.
I just love that.
It's like, did we buy a hot tub? Although, granted, I have left Costco with a barbecue by accident. Yeah. So it's happened.
So typical.
I've left with some wedges, like some golf wedges.
Like, what did I just do? If Costco was to sponsor the show, it'd be great.
Kirkland Golf Clubs, is that your...
Yeah, I had them.
You used the ball, right?
Yeah.
The balls, right?
Yeah.
You know who I like is Liam O'Brien. If you're going to have a maniac enforcer type guy, I really like his energy. He's a lot of fun.
But Game of Thrones.
Josh Doan's a good player. Dylan Genther just got a bunch of money.
He could have been an extra in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
I can't imagine a team moving somewhere and like a fan base inheriting not only like a team that's decent, but like a better situation. Just with the picks and the cap space.
Great young players.
The what the Coyotes were, and Bill Armstrong, give him credit, like building it up and being down there, and probably the ability to just do it without anybody caring.
Comes on our show once a year.
He's like, it's like, yeah, we're having fun. Yeah. Just get all these picks and young players. And now you go to a place where they're going to be, by all accounts, really into it, and it's big deal, and now they're going to be decent. Like, do you think they're a playoff team? But I think they're going to be better.
But Ingram, if they get good goaltending, Ian Cole and John Marino are not small additions. Like, they could be a playoff team.
Love them getting Sergachev, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real big-time...
which Sergachev you get.
But he's a good NHL defenseman.
He is.
Yeah.
So. And Clayton Keller can still golf most of the winter in Salt Lake.
He is just a stick.
Yeah, I've heard good things.
Played with Rahm all the time in Arizona. Life. Yeah.
Yeah, tough.
On the heels of the news... yesterday that Jeremy Swayman has signed, comes out news of Shesterkin being presented with an 8-year, $88 million extension. And this is from ESPN's Kevin Weeks he turned down.
What do we know about this?
Well, what we know is that Shesterkin had made it abundantly clear that he was going to be the highest paid goaltender in NHL history.
11 would do that.
I had heard that the number had been as high as 12.
his ask.
Yeah.
Okay. The question that I mumbled very poorly, though, is why do we know about this?
Barney, the first thing you said to me when I walked in, you're like, somebody wants people to know about this.
Right. Like, I think you look at Boston, suddenly the public pressure gets piled on by Cam Neely.
Sure.
And the deal gets done.
So this gets leaked to Kevin Weeks. Get it out there.
Suddenly you got all the Rangers fans going, 11, I'm sorry, you won't sign for 11 times 8?
And it's not enough.
Yeah. And all of a sudden your fans are up in arms and you say, look, you got to just
I had heard a couple, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago that this should get settled around 11-5, 11-4, 11-5. So they're close.
Yeah.
They're really close.
Is this going to be the new thing? The public leak becomes the sign that they're 0.25 million away from a deal per year. And so many people remind me that 0.25 times 8 is 2 million. Thanks.
Shesterkin.
Really?
Thanks, math people.
I think Shesterkin went public that said, if the season starts, I'm not negotiating.
I think that's such a dumb thing to say. You don't negotiate it. You don't go in a room and the hanging light in a dark room and argue. Your agent calls you one day and goes, hey,
listen,
we came to it. Do you like this number?
Come Christmas, if they came back to him with $95 or $97 million, he's not turning it down because he said, oh, I said we're not negotiating.
Yeah, sorry. I already said I wouldn't.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, I wish I could.
Oh, my God.
I said that.
Can I get a mulligan?
I shouldn't have. My bad.
Can I get a mulligan?
Such a great point. Yeah. It's like that's been one of our mutual hated things forever. Well, you can't talk about making $100 million during the season for 5 minutes.
Yeah, sorry, we got Columbus tonight. I can't chat about it.
No, it's,
I'll take a minute.
Yeah, it's
I'll
absurd.
Come off the ice to talk about it.
So 11.5 is not a stretch for Shesterkin to get.
No,
it's not. And believe it or not, Carey Price still sits at the top at 10.5, and that thing was done, if I'm not mistaken, 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, that's a long time.
God, I still Google Carey Price cap friendly.
And so in 7 or 8 years, a new top-end goalie can't up that by $1 million?
Sure. He certainly could, should, can, will.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That contract was signed on July 2nd, 2017. Was when that contract was signed.
So I think this is like, this should happen. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing to stop it. And this is your goalie. And the Rangers have been blessed, man, from Richter to King Lundqvist to now Shesterkin.
Yeah, they've truly been blessed.
Incredible run.
It's almost like
Glenn Healy.
Beezer.
But it's almost like the Packers with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Or like those franchises that they just have a certain position like locked
down. The Penguins
down.
Have had a generational player for 30 years in a row.
Except for those 2 years where they were like the worst ever and they were going to leave and then they just got sit and they were just the best again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've had a lot of good players there. But yeah.
That's nice. It's one of my favorite contract negotiating stories, and I don't remember where I heard it or if it's even true, but the Joe Thornton making, what, $7 million or something came to the deal, and then his deal ended up being 0.1, because once it came to the deal, he said in 0.1 for the boys, because he's like, I'll pay for everything, all the bar tabs, I'll take them out, just need the 0.1 for the boys. Pay the bill for the boys. 0.1 for the boys. I'd like to if Sportsnet wants to tack 0.1 on, I'll make it for the boys.
Thanks.
I'll pay for
and for the record, days. 0.1's $100,000.
$100,000.
And they went for it?
That's the story, yes, that they went for it. All right, you're the captain. The 0.1's for the boys.
Guaranteed didn't spend much more than $30,000. They pocketed the 70.
Yeah, he was really taking them out if he's spending $100K a year.
But you got a hockey team. You go to some of those places they eat at.
Yeah, that's true.
He could go through.
But he's taking them to the keg in Canada.
There's a good question. What's the biggest meal tab you ever had to pay?
Kipper or someone else? Kipper didn't make enough.
So I used to take the boys to my dad's restaurant up in Markham, Peter's
did you?
Steakhouse in Markham.
Your dad
Highway 7
one?
West of 48.
Yeah.
And like Dale Hunter still tells me he's still paying off like the Visa bill off of, you know.
Is that right?
Because I didn't spring.
Okay, then.
No. You know what I was making back then?
Yeah.
Like,
what's the biggest one you've seen? What's the biggest one you've seen?
Well, I was part of a rookie meal.
Yeah.
In the Washington Capitals, along with Alan May and Rob Murray and Robin Bawa. And I don't know, I spent like $1,500, which was all the money in the world.
That's devastating.
Like $6,000 for the meal, which is this 1989.
Do you think you got it back from rookies over the
years? $6,000 in 1989.
Oh, buddy, I was like, yeah, I did get it back. Yeah. And it, back then it was like revenge.
Yeah. Because at some point, did they still do that where the rookies pay? Because I feel like they don't do anything to rookies anymore. Rookies have a good.
I think a rookie meal still is a thing, 100%. Is it not?
I think so.
I think it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
But, you know.
It is. But, you know, it got to the point where it was entertaining and you'd hear stories and then you'd one-up stories. And then it got to the point where it's like, you guys are gross.
Too much money.
No, you guys are gross and disgusting and it's a waste and people are starving out there and you can give it to charity and then it just got shut right down.
Right. It's like, so-and-so got three lobster dinners. That's like, that's not cool.
Don't you remember the Boston Bruins Stanley Cup bill at $150,000.
I was just going to bring that up. I was Googling it. Right. It was $157,000.
Was the tab for the Bruins at the post-cup party. Yeah. Like at the bar that night that they won and went out.
So when we won the Stanley Cup, of course,
I'm sure they scratched enough nickels together to get it done.
I'm not saying didn't get paid.
So Stanley Cup parties, we're out. It's bottle service. And it's still like $2,500 bottles and stuff like that. And remember at the end of the night, like
running
the manager handing me the bill.
Oh my God.
For like $64,000.
And I'm touch like, that thing. Like it's on fire. Someone else.
Do you know who I am?
Like, do you know who I am in a condescending way to yourself?
Have you ever heard the term fourth line winger?
Look for mess. Yeah. Where's Leach?
I'm like, nowhere to be found anybody.
I wonder if Jeremy Jacobs would have paid that.
Looked at him and I said, I'll come back tomorrow with a more important person than me.
Yeah.
I'll
come back tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, okay.
They had no choice.
$60 or $60,000 no bill. Yeah.
I'll be back tomorrow. Kipper's hauling ass to Mexico.
I'm doing tic tacs as collateral. In the meantime, I'll be back for this.
I'm doing dishes. I'm mopping the floor. What else can I do? Never be the last guy.
No, this bar tab is hilarious. I'm just looking at this Bruins one.
I think there's like a Bud Light or some funny bottom thing.
One Amstel Light. $6.
Who's drinking the Amstel?
It's incredible.
One Amstel.
One Amstel Light, one Corona. $6 each.
So then meanwhile, there's bottles at Ace.
We're not going to see Swayman tonight, are we?
No, Corpusalo, first guy off the ice, so he's starting tonight.
People thought they'd play Swayman.
Crazy.
Stupid.
They'll save him for the home opener.
Oh, I'm watching the...
Can you imagine if he pulled a muscle or got hurt, how stupid the Boston Bruins would look?
Oh, my God. It'd be the dumbest.
I'm watching the Amazon series with Swayman the feature. He's episode three. I did forget. I did start it. He's charming.
Charming?
Yeah. He's a big personality.
Likes dinner and golf.
Likes the attention. Mm. You know, he really likes to be the man, it sounds like, which I think if you're a Bruins fan, you like that. Yep. You like that attitude.
But he challenged the Bruins right off the gate.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of there's teams you can think that you could stand up to, but this has been notoriously the hardest and toughest team to go against when it comes to negotiations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, give them credit. It all depends on where the Boston Bruins were. Like if they started him at 7.5 and they worked him, he needed to go what he needed to do to get to 8.5, then it was worth it.
But I hate this stuff. You have, over the years, I've learned, you believe in the idea of staking out these negotiating positions and that it sets the parameters for the conversation. But to me, it's so arbitrary. Like, you know, if we go into it and Swayman says he wants $32 million and then it's great that they talk him down to $20 million, $20 million's too much. You know, like the initial numbers are so nonsensical.
Well, his initial number was 10. No, it was 10. And there is a legitimate argument that says that the market has moved for top goalies to 9.5.
Yeah.
10.
He might be. So maybe he should have been.
The cap said 88 million right now. It should be at 100. There's so much new money out there, but they artificially pulled it back because they wanted to look after their escrow and get the debt off the books, which is fine. But there's new money out there, which moves the market up.
Players ate it from COVID.
All right. Our thanks to Sat Shaw this hour and Dominic Moore. Enjoy the games tonight. And we're back tomorrow to tee them all up on Sportsnet.